Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Nectar of Instruction as a part of our Bhakti Shastri course. Today we'll be discussing one of the most important verses of Nectar of Instruction. Now we are entering deep into the heart of sadhana. Now we talked about association in the previous three verses, texts. And now we are moving forward to discuss about what do we do in association. So one of the most important activities that we do is chant the holy names. And this verse is fundamental. It is the most important verse that can sustain us in the process of sadhana bhakti if we just understand its essence and internalize it. So let's look at this text. So this is text 7 of the Obdeshamrit. Syat Krishna Nama Charitadi Sitapya Vidya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintva Adaradanudinam Kalusai Vajushtva Saad Vikramad Bhavati Tadgad Moolahantri. So, Syat Krishna Nama Charitadi. So, Krishna Nama Charita, everything connected with Krishna, his name, his character, his pastimes. Adi means his pastimes and other things related with him. Sita. Sita actually refers to sweetness. Sugar candy, Prabhupada. Api Avidya. Avidya Pitta. So, there is a implied comparison here. When there is an explicit comparison, He was as powerful as a lion. That is called a simile. When there's a direct comparison, his roar was leonine. I mean, leonine is like a lion. So, that means there's an implied comparison, not a stated comparison. So, here there's an implied comparison that's called a metaphor. So, avidya is compared to a pitta. And pitta, when a tapta, pittopatapta, when the person is afflicted by pitta, rasanasya narochikanu. Rasana is tongue. Narochikanu. When the tongue is afflicted by pitta, at that time, because of that bile infection, here it's being referred to jaundice over here, then the person cannot taste anything sweet. Narochikanu. That which is sita, that which is sweet, cannot be tasted, relished because of pitopatapta. But the treatment according to Ayurveda for jaundice is Kintva Adarad Anudinam Khalusaiva Jushta. If somehow Anudinam, daily, regularly, one keeps taking Adarad, respectfully, Jushta, one keeps accepting it, then Swadvikramad Bhavati. And gradually the sugarcane juice, which is sweet, it actually acts as a therapy, a cure for the sickness, and as a person gets cured, then the person awakens the natural taste, and tadgad moolahantri, the disease is destroyed from the root. So the point is that the same thing which doesn't taste good, if we keep taking it, it can cure us and it will start tasting good. So the holy name, character, pastimes and activities of Krishna are all transcendently sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So the disease is destroyed at the root. Let us see how this happens. Let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport here. So, here there is a chart, gives the overview of the purport. So, the symptoms of the disease are that there is no taste for the name form. And the analogy that is given is for sugar candy, jaundice. So, every disease has its particular symptom. And from the symptom, we have to go back to the cause. So, somebody can say, oh, I don't find Krishna consciousness relishable, I don't care for it. So yes, that is a problem definitely. But the deeper problem is a misdirection of our heart. It is avidya. So avidya is not just ignorance in terms of philosophical ignorance. It is ignorance in terms of ignorance about the right object of love. Now what happens? What is the cause of the disease? That is described in the next section. That is individual. There is ignorance, avidya. And avidya, what it leads to? Forgetfulness. And what is the forgetfulness that is being talked about here? The forgetfulness is that Jivera Swarup Hoye Krishna Nityadas. and Krishna Bhulyaji Bhogavancha Kare, Nikatastamaya Tare, Japatiya Dhare. So these two verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita are very important. Let's look at them. First is Jivere Swarup Hoye Krishner Nitya Das. You know, in this one verse, the whole import of all the Vedic wisdom is summarized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in one concise sutra-like verse. Jivere Swarup Hoye Krishner Nitya Das. Eternal Swarup of the Jiva is to serve the Lord. And it is with this service attitude that the living entity thrives eternally. The Lord. So, this is the eternal relationship which we have. Now, when we forget it, Krishna Bhulya Jiru, Bhogavancha Kare, Nikatastamaya Tare Japatiya Dare. So, how does the soul who is in the eternal position of loving and serving Krishna, how does the soul lose that position? That is, Krishna Bhulya, the soul forgets Krishna. We can apply this in our sadhaka study also. We are practicing Krishna consciousness, but if you are not careful, we forget Krishna. Krishna Bhulya Jiyu. And then what happens? Bhogavancha Kare. We all have the need for happiness. None of us can live without happiness. So, if we don't get happiness in remembering and serving Krishna, naturally our hunger for happiness will need to be fulfilled somewhere else. So, therefore, Bhogavancha Kare. Therefore, the desire to enjoy comes up. And this Bhogavancha Kare, what does it lead to do? It leads to Nikatastha Maya Tare. So now I have the desire to enjoy, but Maya is right next. That means temptations are right there in our heart and outside our heart. Now, in our heart means that all the past things that we have done wrong, they are those impressions are there. They are pushing us. And outside the heart means around the world there are so many temptations. And so Nikatastha Maya Tare. That Maya is situated very close by Chapatiya Dhare, just catches the soul. And then, once the soul gets caught in Maya, at that time, those impressions become stronger because of the indulgence, and then the grip of those impressions in future becomes even stronger. And then, it becomes very difficult to be released. So, this is how our disease increases. So, once the disease is increased, the soul is distracted by Maya, Nikatastha Maya Tare, Chapatiya Dhare. So when the Maya catches the living entity, the Maya, then false or bad shelter. You need to think somehow or the other, by doing this particular activity, that particular activity, I'll become happy. But all of these are durashaya. None of these are going to be satisfied. They're all false shelters. And they let us down. What are these false shelters? We think that wealth will make me happy, sex will make me happy, power will make me happy. And most of all, we think the body will make me happy. But all of these, they let us down. Ultimately, the body turns into a source of misery for us. And the conditioned soul somehow hope against hope. Things that I'll be able to enjoy. So actually, the history of universal defeat has not dampened the hope of imminent victory for the conditioned soul. History of universal defeat. Whoever has tried in material existence to gain happiness, they've all suffered. They've all died. So there's a history of universal defeat. Everybody has been defeated. But it has not dampened the hope of imminent victory. The conditioned soul thinks, oh, I will just gain this. This is a quote from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's book, Endless Love. So we all think that, next day, tomorrow, next week, I'll become happy. Now certainly, we need hope in life. But we don't need false hopes. We need true hopes. Material world, things are not going to become better in terms of there being a permanent settlement. Certainly, in the material world, there are ups and downs. And when there are downs, we do need hope that things will become better. But if we focus all our efforts on just improving things materially, then we are underutilizing our intelligence. And we are actually, in many ways, misusing our energy. Because if we just let all our energy and intelligence stay focused only on improving things materially, then it's a lost cause. It's like trying to find a comfortable situation in the ocean. Sometimes the waves may not be so jerky and strong, and the wave ocean may seem comfortable also, but afterwards, when the waves come, it's going to toss and throw a person up and down. So this world is like a place with waves. So that's why the scriptures tell us that work whatever is required at a level of duty to try to keep things materially stable, but focus one's energy on spiritual advancement. Spiritual advancement is ultimately what will make us happy. It will take us to eternal shelter. And that comes by the chanting of the holy names. So now, at an individual level, the soul forgets Krishna and gets caught. And then, at a collective level, we'll see that at a collective level, there is atheistic leadership. So atheistic leadership, what do we mean by that? Today's politicians, today's leaders, they don't care for God at all. They may give some nominal lip service to God if that helps them to get votes. There was a famous politician, that person was an atheist. And in one of his books, he writes, I just can't understand how people can bow down to stone images and imagine that is God, when actually there is no God. But he says, anyway, in this country, because so many people believe in these ancient books which talk about these sort of things, so it's useful to have working knowledge of these things. And by this working knowledge, one can influence these leaders towards doing good, these people towards doing good things. So the approach was, I will decide what is good and I will use the scriptures, quoting them selectively to make people do good things. And actually what the scriptures tell us about God and everything, that is all false. So this is misappropriation of God's words for one's own purposes. And it's very demoniac, Prabhupada, just as Ravana wanted to enjoy Sita, Lord Ram's property, for his own pleasure. So like that, there are people who, if they are openly atheistic, they'll say there is no God. But in places where people have religious sentiments and saying, I don't believe in God, that will not give them political votes. So they will not say that. What they will simply say is, just actually don't take this God business seriously. And we can quote some God verses, but I will tell you my programs and you act according to my programs. So these people, what happens because of them is, when people are misled by these blind leaders, at that time, oh, who are these blind? Prabhupada said they are misled by the blind. They are Namam Dushkritna Muda. Krishna quotes in 7.15. Those people don't surrender to him at all. And among them there are Asurambhama Ashritaha Mayaya Aparita Jnana. Those whose knowledge has been stolen away and those who are openly demoniac. So they oppose devotional endeavors and they personally never surrender to Krishna. So what are we talking about over here? We are talking about why people are unable to have a taste for the chanting of the holy names. So there is an individual cause for it and there is a collective cause for it. So we are looking at the collective cause right now. The collective cause is that there is an overall culture of materialism and atheism which bombards people and leaves them no time or energy or inclination to turn wholeheartedly towards spirituality. Now people may do something religious just because it looks good in a particular culture, but that is far from a transformational imbibing or adoption of spirituality. So now what is the, so once you understand the cause, then we look at what is the cure. So what is the cure? The cure is chanting of the holy names. So now how do we chant? The method is, we have to chant attentively. Swadvi, as I just said that, khaludinam anudinam adarad, kintu adarad anudinam khalu sevyushta. So adarad is respectfully, with care and attention. And then actually this is an easy process for us to purify ourselves. Now how is it easy? Chanting doesn't require any yogic gymnastics. It doesn't require anything which is very difficult to do. And cheto darpanam arjunam, as is quoted there. So actually these two are different examples. One is that the mirror is there, dust is there on the mirror, so one cannot see anything over there. So the mirror, when the dust is removed, then one can see. Use the mirror for its purpose of seeing. So similarly, when our mind is clean, then we can have clear perception of reality. Otherwise, the perception remains unclear. And then fire refers to how fire is covered by smoke. There are many other places where the fire metaphor is used, but generally, fire is covered by smoke, we remove the smoke. Fire also refers to that which burns away dirt. So, things that are obstructing can be burned to ashes by fire. Mahadavagni nirvapanam, it extinguishes. There's another metaphor there that actually fire is the cause of suffering and fire can also be extinguished by the chanting of the holy name. So, with respect to fire, we can have three different metaphors and there are many actually. So, one is that just as fire is covered by smoke, Similarly, the consciousness of the soul is covered by the ignorance. This comes in the Bhagavad Gita. Dhumena avriyate vahaneer, 3.38. And then, that is one metaphor. So then, by the process of purification, the smoke can be removed and the fire can blaze forward. So like that, one can purify oneself by chanting. The other metaphor of fire is, so here fire is the original consciousness and smoke is what is covering. And purification is removing the smoke. The other is, metaphor is that fire itself is the purifier. And the impurities in our hearts are like the things that we want to burn away. So when we practice devotional service is like a flame which awakens in our heart. And that purifies us, frees us of all sinful reactions. And then we move forward in spiritual life by that way. So after this, the other metaphor which you could understand over here is that of fire itself acting as the object which is burning. Samsara davan aldida loka. So if there is a blazing fire of material existence and we are afflicted in that fire, so it has to be extinguished. That comes in the same Chaitudarpana Marjanam. Bhamaha davagni nirvapanam. That great flame gets extinguished completely. So in this way, the fire metaphor can be used in multiple ways to illustrate spiritual truths. So where do we get the cure? We get the cure within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada says that this is like a spiritual hospital to cure all of us. And we'll discuss the 9 stages of bhakti a little later. But the first is Shraddha. So when we have a little Shraddha, we come in the association of devotees, little faith. And then after that we lead to Sadhu Sangha. We come in the association of devotees. And then we hear from the devotees. Then the devotees tell us do vajana kriya, start chanting the holy name, start practicing spiritual life. So chant 16 rounds, follow the 4 principles. And when we do this, then anartha nivritti happens. So the impurities in the heart start going away. So there are examples which Prabhupada gives of how one is able to follow the principles which one might not have been able to follow earlier. And then one gradually gets, as anartha nivritti happens, basically the disease goes away. And then, you know, in every therapy, there are two parts. The first part is removal of the negative. And then the second part is the restoration of the positive. So for example, there is, if a person has got a terrible disease, like say TB or something, the treatment goes for say 3, 4, 5 months itself, it's acute TB. Then for say 3 months, the person takes acute treatment and the germs come under control and the disease goes away. But because the disease was there, so the person is internally weakened. The person is internally not having an energy. So sickness has gone away, but health has not yet come back. But then people go to places like sanitarium where they just recover and regain their health, recuperation. So recuperation is not the same as being treated, because at that time there's no active treatment there necessarily. The infection is gone, but the health has not yet come. So health gradually comes back during recuperation. So similarly, there is a stage beyond cure. What is the stage beyond cure? The stage beyond cure is that one comes to bhava. So actually, when anartha nivritti has gone off, nishtha ruchi have come, then by that time one has come to the stage of already one is more or less healed. So bhava means one starts experiencing spiritual emotions. So Prabhupada is preliminary awakening of dormant love of Godhead. And then that is characterized, Prabhupada explains, by symptoms. What is that? One has no bodily concept left anymore. I am not the body. One must understand this very, very clearly. We understand it theoretically now, but that time one has no connection. One understands that I have eternal Swarupa and I have eternal relationship with Krishna. And while operating in this world, person clearly understands this is Krishna, this is Maya. And if I go into Krishna, there is light. If I go into Maya, there is darkness. So, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Handakar, Yaha Krishna Pahar Nahi Maya Radhikar. One understands this very clearly. And so, one is undisturbed by Maya. So, overall, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada gives a comprehensive overview of the process of devotional service by which one can Swadvikramad Bhavati, one can gain access to eternal happiness. When all of us want to be happy. And the process of Krishna consciousness ultimately is meant to make us happy. But there is a process involved in that. So we will focus here in this class on happiness. You know, how we need to use our intelligence to persevere in the process of Krishna consciousness. All of us have a higher taste and a lower taste. The higher taste is the happiness we get in connection with Krishna. The lower taste is the happiness we get in connection with worldly things. Especially if the things are immoral, they are sensual and immoral, anti-devotional, that's even more detrimental. These are the two kinds of tastes that we have. Now, among these tastes, we have to give up the lower taste and we have to move towards the higher taste. So how do we do that? For that, we have to understand the nature of material happiness and spiritual happiness. So let's look at it. So essentially, we can look at this graph of happiness versus time. So the y-axis is happiness, the x-axis is time. Now if you see material happiness, there is some happiness in youth. When our body is young and healthy, then yes, we can eat, we can do all sort of things, we can enjoy. But then that graph keeps going down, down, down. Because over a period of time, the body's capacity to enjoy decreases, diminishes. And after some time, the body loses all its capacity to enjoy. And then it goes into negative axis, where we have sickness, we have disease. And a person is practically, every moment is filled with pain. So that is how this graph goes towards the negative axis. Now significantly, even in youth, the happiness that we actually enjoy is limited. It's not as in youth a person can enjoy all the time. There is some enjoyment some of the time, but after that, there is also suffering. So therefore, actually the happiness is finite. And then if you compare that with the graph of spiritual happiness, so spiritual happiness means that initially it starts from little less. So when we come to the temple, we chant Hare Krishna, we dance in the kirtan, we feel happy. But then after that, when we go back to our places, then the mind starts tormenting. Oh, this, I want to do this, I want to do that. And so the happiness doesn't stay always with us. But as we keep practicing spiritual life, as our attraction to Krishna increases, our happiness also increases. So how does this happen? It happens by the gradual process of purification. So then material happiness, the graph will go towards negative, negative. But spiritual happiness, the graph will keep going towards positive, positive. And ultimately, we will get infinite happiness when we connect with Krishna with complete love. So now let us look at the nature of happiness further. This is based on Bhagavad Gita 18.37 and 38. We will be discussing this again when we come to Bhagavad Gita. But that time it will be brief. So here, we see that here P and N, some of you studied electronics, it's not P and NP diodes. P refers to poison, N refers to nectar. So Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the nature of happiness and goodness, that is similar to the nature of spiritual happiness. And the nature of happiness and passion, that is more or less overall the nature of most of the material pleasures that people chase after in life. So the nature is different because spiritual happiness is characterized by, Krishna says, Yattadagre vishamiva pariname amritopamam tatsukham sattvikam proktam atmabuddhi prasadajam. So he says, Yattadagre vishamo, that which tastes like poison in the beginning, but pariname amritopamam, which tastes like nectar in the end. That is happiness in the mode of goodness. And that is the nature of spiritual happiness also. So now if you see, the poison is initial. And the nectar is long after that. But still, we have to penetrate through the poison before we can reach the nectar. So in that sense, there is a process which you have to follow. And then, in contrast with that, with respect to material happiness, Krishna says, Vishayendriya sanyoga yattadagre amritopamam pariname vishamo tatsukham raja samsmitam. This is that which tastes like nectar in the beginning, but poison in the end. That is happiness in the mode of passion. That is the nature of most material happiness. We are attracted to certain things and then we want to enjoy them. Even if you get to enjoy them, then there is a little pleasure. But after that, there is so much complication. You know, if people get addicted to things, then there is so much suffering because of that. Even if they don't get addicted to such dangerous things, still everything material is temporary. And when we lose it, there is suffering. So there is nectar in the beginning, but poison in the end. This is the nature of material and spiritual happiness. So this is a good visual image for us to keep in mind with respect to chanting also. Because we are initially diseased, so we may feel there is poison in the beginning. But if you keep persevering, then the poison will end and the nectar will start. And that is what we want. We want to go beyond the poison to the nectar. Let's look at this from another perspective now. How do we say that material happiness is, in a sense, false. So, or it's temporary. So, actually speaking, if you look at it, there are senses and there are sense objects. So, the senses are temporary, the sense objects are temporary. That's why whatever pleasure will come to them is also temporary. This is based on Bhagavad Gita 5.22. Yehi samsparsha cha bhoga dukkha yona yevate. Why? Adi antavantah kaunteya teshu ramate buddha. Just the wise person understand that material pleasures have a beginning and end. That's why they are sources of misery. And a wise person doesn't delight in them. So they have beginning and end. Senses are finite. Senses are limited. Senses are temporary. Sense objects are temporary. Their charm is temporary. That's why the pleasure that comes from their contact is also temporary. So what gives us pleasure is the desire to enjoy. The eyes want to see beautiful forms. The tongue want to taste delicious food. And that gives some pleasure. But that pleasure is limited. So most people think that I don't get pleasure because the objects are not good enough. I don't have good enough objects. People see movies and they think, oh, there are such good looking people out there. And the person I have with me is not so good looking. People think that I'm driving a car. And oh, I have a simple vehicle. That person got such a good looking car. So most of the times we think that I'm not able to enjoy because the objects that I have for enjoyment are not good enough. But the fact is, even if we had the best objects for enjoyment, our capacity to enjoy is limited. Our capacity to enjoy senses, you know, even if a person had one's own 5-star hotel where the best food items are served and the person can eat freely whatever is cooked over there. But how much can the person, can that person eat 24 hours a day? No. So the capacity of the senses to enjoy is limited, and because of that, person cannot enjoy. In the past, in some places like Egypt, there were some kings who, you know, tried to pay their physicians to make painless vomiting pills. There was the idea where they would have golden plates, huge place where they would have huge feasts cooked, and they would eat it all up. Now, after we eat it, the stomach gets full. What happens is, we want to enjoy more, but the body doesn't have any more capacity to enjoy. So what they would get? They would have another golden bowl in which the physicians would get some painless vomiting pills. And they take the vomit everything out. And then get another feast and eat it again. And in this way, they would try to expand the body's capacity to enjoy. But, you know, it is not just the stomach that has the capacity. There's a whole digestive system which has to bear the pressure. And that has not been tried thereafter because it just harms the body terribly. So the point is, it doesn't work. We can't expand the body's capacity to enjoy. That is the nature of material happiness. Now, as compared to spiritual happiness, how do we get it? Krishna says, Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham Atyantam Sukham Ashnute. In 6.28 he says, Brahma Samsparsham, by contact with the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is referred to here as by Brahma, Atyantam Sukham Ashnute. One gets the supreme happiness. Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham. So what is this Brahma Samsparsham? There is a contact of the soul ultimately with Krishna, because Krishna is Param Brahma, as the Bhagavad Gita says in 10.12. So now when we contact Krishna, we experience spiritual happiness. But that contact is not physical. It's not just physical. It's not that if I go to the temple and touch the feet of the deities, I'll feel some current of happiness within me. It's a blessing. It's very purifying to touch the feet of the deities. But the happiness comes not just by contact, it's by service. So when we chant the holy names also, it is when we chant with a service attitude that we experience the higher happiness of Krishna consciousness. So when there's a desire to serve between the soul and Krishna, then the soul and Krishna come together. And that is how contact happens. That contact is at the level of consciousness. Our consciousness has to experience Krishna. And then that gives us happiness. Now if we see, the difference is that the soul is eternal and Krishna is eternal, as compared to both material senses and material sense objects being temporary. And that's why when the two come together, the happiness that will result will be eternal. That is the happiness that we all aspire for. So as compared to the temporary desire, temporary happiness that comes from the contact senses and sense objects, the happiness that will come from the contact of the soul with Krishna will be eternal. So when we are chanting the holy name, this is what we are trying to do. The soul is trying to contact Krishna. Yes, there is a sound vibration and there is a tongue and the ear. That is there, definitely. So we could say it's all material. No. But Krishna is transcendental, and ultimately it's not just the tongue and the ears. It is the soul who is contacting Krishna. No, it is not that. If the soul doesn't contact Krishna, that means if we are not attentive, our consciousness is not experiencing Krishna, then chanting will just appear like a burden. Just keep doing it mechanically. But when we contact Krishna, then we become purified. So the soul is currently sleeping, or we could say, now normally when we use the word sleeping, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has that fame. Bhaktivinoda Thakur envisions Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying, Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago, Gaura Chandra Bole. So now we often use the soul is sleeping. Now, what does exactly the soul sleeping mean? Is the soul actually physically sleeping? A soul doesn't have physical body, so we can't have physical sleep. But what it means is that just as when we are sleeping, we are disconnected from the world around us, we are disconnected from reality, and we go into a dream world which seems like a pseudo reality. So, like that, the soul has become disconnected from reality, that is the reality of its relationship with Krishna, and it's connected with a pseudo reality, that is the play of this world. And the soul has to come out of this. How will the soul come out of it? By the practice of devotional service. So, the sound vibration wakes us up. So, just as in a dream, also a person is active, but it's in a dream world. So, like that, the sleeping souls are also active right now, but they're active in an illusory sense. Like in a dream, we are doing various things. So we are awakened by the sound of the holy name. So essentially, the contact is between when chanting is happening, it's not a verbal activity, it's not an oral activity, although the tongue and the ears are involved, it's not just a verbal or oral activity. Ultimately, the heart has to be involved. So the heart is the place where the soul is residing. And when the soul calls out to Krishna and hears the sound vibration of Krishna's names, then the soul awakens. Then the contact between the soul and Krishna revives the natural attraction between the soul and Krishna. And that increases the contact further. And the greater the contact, the greater is the happiness. So this is how the soul experiences spiritual happiness by the practice of devotional service. And it's this practice that we want to seek for, we want to pursue, we want to cultivate in our spiritual life. Now, one of the very important things for us to persevere in our spiritual life is to recognize that my current condition is a disease. So, how do I understand that my current condition is a disease? Now, one of the characteristics of the disease is, if I have jaundice, one characteristic is that I'm not able to taste sweet things. Another characteristic is that actually I feel uncomfortable. Now, I feel sickly. I feel as if I have no strength. So the one side is that I don't get happiness, and the other side is that I get misery. So we will now look at how to drive this metaphor of disease deeper in. We'll try to understand how our material existence and our material condition, material situation is actually a place of misery. So we see that we all need to make our intelligence fit. So fit means we have to make our intelligence healthy, strong, FIT. So FIT describes the characteristics of material enjoyment. Material enjoyment is the characteristics: futility, insubstantiality, and temporality. So futility means that many times we make dreams and fantasies for enjoyment and we don't get it only. So that is futility. So that happens when, say, somebody dreams that I will get a big feast to eat. Tomorrow there's a feast and there's going to be gulab jamuns there, and I love gulab jamuns. But then I go there and I come to know that it's all a rumor. There was no gulab jamun only over there. So we hanker for something and we don't get it. That is futility. Other type possibility is that we hanker for something, we get it, but it doesn't live up to our expectations. The gulab jamun is there, but the person who made the gulab jamun made a mess of the recipe, and the gulab jamun doesn't taste good at all. So it's insubstantial. We get the object. First is we don't get the object. We get the object, but it's not good enough. That's insubstantiality. Third is temporality. Temporality means we get the object, it gives us enjoyment, but then after that, it gets over. So I go there. I get the gulab jamuns, but they get over, or my stomach's capacity gets over, and then I cannot enjoy anymore. So when we contemplate on this, then we can get rid of the fantasies for happiness through material enjoyment. So now let's contrast this material enjoyment, how it is ultimately a doomed project. Because when we seek material enjoyment, only one of these three things are going to happen. We crave for it and don't get it. We crave for it, get it, but it doesn't live up to our expectations. We crave for it, get it, it lives somewhat to our expectations, but then it leaves us. And then again we lose everything. So in this way, actually it is a lost cause. It is a doomed project. So what is the way out for us? There is an alternative, that is spiritual happiness. So let's look at spiritual happiness. This is Sing Your Way to Happiness. This is an acronym, S-I-N-G. So what does this refer to? It refers to four characteristics of spiritual happiness. So first is, S is special. How is it special? Because if we see, all living beings are experiencing material enjoyment. Whatever little enjoyment, all living beings are getting it. But it is only human beings who can experience spiritual happiness. So in that sense, spiritual happiness is a special privilege of human beings. And even among all the innumerable living beings that are there, human beings that are there, large, infinite number, not infinite ultimately, but so large number, out of that, the number of people who are actually practicing spiritual life and seeking spiritual happiness are so few. So those who are practicing spiritual life are rare, they are special. As Krishna says in 7.3, Manushyanam Sahasreshu. So actually everybody wants to do something special, do want something out of the way, something extraordinary, something which will make a person stand out. Now, in material life, people try to be special by adopting the latest fashions. No, I want to have this hairstyle, I want to have this dress, I want to have this car, I want to have this watch, this cell phone. And that way I try to seem special. But ultimately, material life is all about the same old thing, punah punas charuti charunana, enjoying the same old thing, eating, sleeping, waiting, defending. But spiritual life offers us the opportunity to do something very special. So it's a special kind of happiness. And those who want to break the mold, do something, be trailblazers, as they say, be trendsetters, be do something special, new, they can choose spiritual happiness. So there is a first point, that so few people are actually seeking it among the millions and billions of people that are there on this planet. What to speak of all the other living beings. Then the other characteristic of spiritual happiness is I is increasing. Spiritual happiness, unlike material happiness, doesn't decrease over time. On the contrary, it increases. Because the more we learn to love and serve Krishna, the more our contact with Krishna becomes stronger, stronger, stronger. And when our contact with Krishna becomes stronger, and naturally by that, we experience greater happiness. So as we love Krishna more and more, we remember it more and more. So Krishna is like a reservoir of happiness. And if we go connect more and more with that reservoir, we will get more happiness. So in material life, the happiness is like a drop. But in Krishna consciousness, the happiness is like an ocean. But unfortunately, we are at the periphery of the ocean. So we get a little water. We are not gone into the ocean. But the more we go into the ocean, the more water we'll get. And this is not just water, it is like nectar. It is supremely relishable. So, the more we connect with Krishna, the more our happiness will increase in spiritual life. Anandam buddhi vardhanam is vardhan. And then there is constant happiness. Pratipadam purna amrita svadhanam. At every moment we'll experience the happiness. So how does this happiness come? We discussed about the soul here, this Krishna here, and there's a contact. And the contact happens to the desire to serve. So as the desire to serve will increase, and the contact will be greater, and then the happiness will also be greater. So in spiritual life, our happiness will keep increasing. And that's what we always want, isn't it? So our happiness will never go down on a downward curve, as it will happen in material life. Then after that, N is non-dependent. So non-dependent means that actually, in material life, we are always dependent on external things for happiness. How are we dependent? Because if a person at a very gross level, if a person is addicted to alcohol or to drugs, and the person is very dependent on the alcohol or drugs for getting happiness, whatever that experiences, we can't call it happiness, but even if somebody calls it happiness, person is so terribly dependent on that for happiness. But even if a person is not somebody, is a sports fan, then that person is dependent on the favorite team winning. And even if he says, oh, I just love the sports, I don't care who wins. But still the person is dependent on either going to the stadium to watch the match, or is dependent on the television program that comes and that broadcasting that happens, electricity being there, and the television set being there for the person to see and enjoy. So any material enjoyment that we take, it makes us dependent on external things. And because external things are not in our control, they may be there today, they may go away tomorrow. Then our happiness will also go away with that. But with respect to spiritual life, we become non-dependent on anything external. We use the word non-dependent, not independent, because we don't become independent in the sense of we become separate from Krishna. Actually, to become dependent on Krishna is the supreme form of independence. Because when we become dependent on Krishna, we become independent of everything else for our happiness. We depend only on Krishna for happiness, and that gives us supreme happiness. Because Krishna is always in our heart and He will never leave us. So the more we connect with Krishna, the more we experience spiritual happiness, and the less we need to depend on externals for happiness. That's how we become happy. We become non-dependent on anything. A devotee can go anywhere, chant Hare Krishna, think of Krishna, speak about Krishna and be happy. Srila Prabhupada went to America, but wherever he went, he was glorifying Krishna. And because he was connected with love with Krishna, he was happy everywhere. And then last G is generous. Generous means what? That actually this is a happiness. Our happiness will make others happy. That is the wonderful thing about spiritual happiness. That when a devotee relishes Krishna consciousness, and the devotee gets taste in Krishna consciousness, realization in Krishna consciousness, vigor in Krishna consciousness, the devotee shares that with others. And by that, others also learn, others also feel inspired, others also get benefited and move towards that happiness. If you contrast that with most forms of material happiness, actually if there are 50 rasgullas and there are 25 devotees, then everybody will get 2. But if somebody wants more, if one person takes 10 instead of 2, then what happens is 4 other people are not getting the rasgullas, or many other people will have, if they are going to share, then they will get less. So in material life, because the enjoyment is limited, so one person's enjoyment is at the expense of other person's enjoyment. Whereas in spiritual life, our enjoyment, the more we chant, dance, become purified, develop love for Krishna, the more not only we relish happiness, but we share that happiness with others. And that way, we become not only ourselves happy, but we share that happiness with others. So it's generous sort of happiness. Generous in the sense that we relish happiness and we can share this happiness with others. So that's why the gopis also say, Bhurida Jana, those who speak about you, O Krishna, Tava kathamritam tapta jivanam kavibhi kavitam kalma shapaham shravana mangalam. So they describe that those who speak about you, they do auspiciousness for all. Vigrananti jay bhurita janaha shri shravana mangalam shri madatatam. That those who speak about you, O Krishna, they offer nectar that relieves the burning hearts of the conditioned souls. And those sound vibrations about your glories, they are filled with spiritual power and they bring auspiciousness in the life of all those who hear it. And this way they are the greatest welfare workers. So it is, so though when we experience spiritual happiness, actually we help others also to become happy. So in this way, when we are chanting Hare Krishna, we have to actually be convinced it's not just for our own good. Sometimes we feel, oh, there are so many problems in the world. What is my chanting going to do for the problems? I should be doing something practical. Actually, our chanting is the most practical thing that we can do. Because by our chanting, we become purified. And when we become purified, when we experience spiritual happiness by that, we can share that spiritual happiness with others. So attentive chanting is not just something we do for our own purification, not just for the pleasure of our spiritual master and Krishna, but it's also for the benefit of the world. Because when we chant, we experience spiritual happiness, then we don't ourselves come under the control of lust, anger, greed. And when we come under the control of lust, anger, greed, then we are dragged about and we do things which harm others and which trouble others, which harm ourselves and harm others also. So we want to become free from such troubles. And the way we become free from such troubles is by chanting. So we minimize the problem and we make a positive contribution toward the solution. This is how we need to understand that by chanting, what is going to happen is, it's special how many people are experiencing the happiness of the holy name. It's going to increase as we develop more and more attraction to the holy name. And it's non-dependent. If I just develop a taste for the holy name, then it will be like I have a permanent gulab jamun in my tongue. Whenever I want, I chant and I get happiness over there. You know, so that is how a devotee will be. And in fact, it's not just a gulab jamun. Rupa Goswami says that this happiness is practically so great that I can't even conceive of it. How much nectar is there in the holy names, I don't know. And then it's generous when we sing in kirtans, when we glorify Krishna, others are also benefited by that. Now, let's look at how do we proceed in pursuing this happiness. So, there is intelligence and there is the mind. So, I refers to intelligence, M refers to the mind. So, what happens is the intelligence can understand all this. Oh, this is all good. This higher spiritual happiness is higher, it is better, I want to pursue it. The mind doesn't understand. And the mind just says, no, I want to enjoy this. So actually, to make the intelligence high, greater, stronger than the mind, we have to do things. There is conviction and there is commitment. Conviction means we philosophically understand clearly. Now, this is a pleasure that will lead me to misery. I don't want to go in this direction. And this is a path where there will be poison in the beginning, but there will be nectar in the end. So I will persevere in it. So we need conviction. And then after conviction comes commitment. We all have to make commitments. Yes, when we take initiation, we make the commitment that come what may, every day I am going to chant 16 rounds. And this commitment ensures that we keep practicing. So now we may wonder that we may see sometimes devotee is just chanting inattentively, you know, looking here, looking there and chanting. You may think, what is the use of such chanting? Better chant less round, but chant them attentively. What is the need to chant 16 rounds like this, so inattentively? Actually, the point is, it is not that quality will automatically come by its own efforts, by its own effort. Sometimes we may get taste in the holy name, but even if there is no quality, in many ways, the commitment to quantity acts as a big impetus for the development of quality. The commitment to quantity acts as an impetus for the development of quality. How is that? Actually, when we start chanting regularly, then we decide to chant 16 rounds. Now, if we are even using our intelligence a little bit, then we will understand that, okay, now I have made a vow to chant 16 rounds, and if I am going to chant 16 rounds, I am going to spend 2 hours in it, or 1.5 hours if somebody is a fast chanter. If I am going to spend that much time, then better let me spend it properly. If I am going to be inattentive, then I will be bored. And if I am going to spend 1.5 hours, 2 hours every day, then if I stay inattentive, then I will be having to spend 2 hours every day for the rest of my life, for how many years earlier, every day I had to spend 2 hours in boredom. So why spend 2 hours like that in boredom? Let me put in a little effort in this. If I put in effort, if I struggle to be attentive, by that I'll become purified and then I'll get taste by it. So actually, the commitment to quantity acts as a strong impetus for developing the attentiveness that will bring quality. So quality is not something that will just magically drop in our lap one day from the sky. Quality in chanting is two-way. Quality in chanting is one way is that we concentrate. We force ourselves to be attentive. And then we get taste. That's one way quality. Another is sometimes it may just come by Krishna's mercy. Sometimes we chant and we feel, oh, this is chanting is so good. I just want to do this. I want to be seriously attentive. I want to be focused on the holy name. So the quantity can come both ways. Sorry, the quality can come both ways. But that occasional quality, whenever it comes, sometimes you just feel inspired to chant. That is fleeting. And if you depend on it, then our spiritual journey will be erratic and sporadic. Sometimes we'll move forward, sometimes we'll stop. And when material desires come, then we'll just make a U-turn and go back away from Krishna towards sense gratification also. But if you want steadiness, then we make a commitment. And then if I decide I have to spend 2 hours every day, then later let me be concentrate. Let me be attentive. And the more we struggle to be attentive, then the more we get the taste in the chanting. And by that, we move forward. That's the commitment part. So there is concentration, there is conviction, and there is commitment. When both of these are there, then we make rapid spiritual advancement. So again, going back to the disease metaphor, which is the theme of this verse, that actually when we go to a doctor, first is we have to be convinced. I'm sick, and what this doctor is telling me is the treatment. So once I get the conviction, then after that comes the next part. It is a commitment. Commitment is, okay, doctor told me to take this medicine morning, afternoon, evening, avoid these things. So I have to make the commitment. The conviction alone is not enough. The commit to conviction and commitment both combined together lead to the cure. So similarly, with respect to our spiritual life, we study the philosophy. And the purpose of studying the philosophy is to understand, okay, this is what is wrong. You know, I'm a soul and I am meant to get happiness and loving Krishna, but I'm not attracted towards matter. And the commitment is, I will regulate my attraction to matter and material enjoyment, and I will, as a discipline, connect myself with Krishna. This is the commitment. And when there's a combination of conviction and commitment, then we make steady spiritual advancement. Now, among these two, what actually brings transformation is the commitment. You know, it's when the patient takes the medicine that the patient gets cured. But what is important for the taking of the medicine is that the patient have conviction. Yes, this treatment will cure me. And if the patient doesn't have the conviction, they will not take the treatment. So similarly for us, you know, it is our remembrance of Krishna, it is our connection with Krishna, our service to Krishna that will purify us. But we all need philosophical conviction for that. That's why when we regularly hear classes, when we study the philosophy diligently, then we understand that this is what is going to purify me. I must do it. So we will see that if we stop studying scripture, if we stop hearing classes, then we will find our impetus to chant, impetus to study, impetus to connect with Krishna go down. So that kintva adaradinam kalusayusha, that adar that should be there in chanting, that adar will come when we have philosophical conviction. So I'll conclude with one more metaphor to understand how we should practice spiritual life. And especially chanting. How to make an intelligence stronger in the mind? So here, there are four aspects. Continuing the disease metaphor, the intelligence should be like the mind, like a mother. The mind is going to be like a child. A child sometimes likes one thing and after some time doesn't like the same thing. So the child is very restless. Child is not very mature to understand the gravity of situations. So imagine this child is sick. When the child is sick, then the mother takes the child to the doctor. The doctor is like the guru. So, when we are suffering in material existence, with our intelligence, we go to the spiritual master. Now the spiritual master, the doctor, when the mother brings the child, the doctor may speak, smile at the child and maybe give a chocolate and be gentle and kind. The serious discussion will be with the mother. My doctor will explain to the mother, okay, this is the disease and this is the treatment, and then you have to make sure that the child takes this treatment morning, afternoon, evening. So now the doctor will primarily speak to the mother, and then they will leave. Then actually making sure that the child takes the medicine is the responsibility of who? The mother. The mother has to take the responsibility by which the child will take the medicine. Now, similarly, the spiritual master may speak some kind words, may embrace us, touch us, smile at us, maybe touch on the forehead, and all that, we feel, oh, this is very nice. My spiritual master loves me so much. He's so loving, he's so kind, so caring. Actually, that is good. But that is like the doctor smiling at the child. That is good. But that is not what is going to cure the child. And sometimes you think, oh, my spiritual master has touched my forehead. Oh, that means I have got mercy. And now I want to make spiritual advancement. No. That doesn't lead to spiritual advancement. Yes, we get mercy, that's fortunate. But actually, that mercy should encourage us to take shelter of the mercy of the process of devotional service that the spiritual master is giving us. So when we take shelter of that mercy, then we truly get cured. So the spiritual master's philosophical instructions, the practical instructions about how we should mold our life, they are like the doctor speaking to the intelligence. Spiritual master speaks to our intelligence, and by that, spiritual master helps us to become inspired to practice the process of devotional service. So then, when we take to the process of devotional service, and especially center of chanting of the holy names, then that's like the mother giving the medicine to the child. And when the mother keeps giving the medicine to the child, then the child slowly but surely becomes cured. Now the child may sometimes say, I don't like this medicine. I don't want to take the medicine. So like that, the mind will say, when we are chanting, no, I don't want to chant. I don't want to chant. I don't want to practice anything. And what does the mother have to do? Be gentle but firm. Mother, gently but firmly, the mother makes the child take the medicine. Similarly, gently but firmly, we have to use our intelligence to make sure that the mind takes the medicine. And by this, we become cured, and slowly then we develop natural spiritual taste. So the medicine is being given, that is the holy name. And when we follow this process and take the medicine, then tadgadamulahandri, the disease will go away, and the natural taste, swad vikramad bhavati, the natural taste for devotional happiness will arouse. And then bhakti will become susukham kartumavyam, bhakti will become joyful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.